And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, this week is some week from the viewpoint of history, American history. We had Lexington and Concord took place so many hundred years ago this week. Paul Revere's ride the same week. The Civil War started this week. The Civil War ended this week. And FDR died April
12th. Lincoln died too. Lincoln was assassinated.
Lincoln was assassinated and FDR died. It's a recapitulation, really, of the kind of history that Martin Luther King said the arc of history bends toward justice. That's if you look at this history, that's what you're talking about. If you look at the entirety of American history, I don't think you can make that argument. But this week you could.
Yeah, if you take extend the week, the 10 or 11 days between April 9th and April 20th, you've got all these things. April 20th, of course, being Adolf Hitler's birthday that a lot of the fascists still celebrate in various forms. So, yeah, we're in the midst of things. Things happen in the springtime. For better or for worse, let's put it to you.
Well, of course, what we're in the midst of is this war. Trump declared war. Of course, he declared war without declaring war against 9 countries before he went to war with Iran. He'd been bombing 8 different countries and threatened a war blockade against Cuba. They didn't threaten it, but imposed a war blockade against Cuba. This man who ran as the peace candidate is the most warlike president that we've had, maybe ever.
In his mind, he deserves the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah, for making war. His mind.
Well,
where do we stand on this war today?
We're waiting to see what happens in Islamabad, Pakistan.
Yeah, but what we know is that we have rising inflation all over America and all over the world. Many countries have gone to 4-day work weeks because they can't power their industry. Some countries have shut their schools down from 5 days to 4 days. There's a crisis with the planting, with the farmers, and that's the economy of lots of the world. We got $8 gas in California. We may have $8 gas in Pennsylvania.
Remember everything he promised. I long time ago, I kind of called it, he has the reverse Midas touch. Everything that he touches goes to, feces. Let's put it to you that way.
Yeah.
And
look at how many thousands of people he's killed in the last period of time. Murdered, killed, illegal, war crimes, crimes against humanity. And to top it off, last week he threatened to end Persian civilization, never to be resurrected. Persian civilization, which may be the oldest that humanity has continuously running. The Chinese are a close second, I think. But Persian civilization has been in the world for 5,000 years. And he said, well, we'll end it and it'll never be resurrected. What kind of a sociopath is that?
Well, sociopaths were, Persians preceded the Greeks and the Romans.
That's right.
So they've been around that long. He just manages to spin everything, and you still have the MAGA people who go along with it. But this war has been one of the two things that's really split his coalition, the other being the Epstein matter. And as we were talking beforehand, I said, it's somewhat of an irony that a lot of people thought that this war was sort of a wag the dog type of thing, where he was using the war to divert attention from the Epstein files. And instead now, out comes Melania and puts the Epstein files right back on the front page, sort of divert attention from the war. You don't know who are, you know, which way things are headed. And this is one of the things also about Trump, is things headed both directions often at the same time, and people don't, you know, see the contradictions or don't care about the contradictions. There's more they are caring about, the MAGA. The only thing is, though, that when you look at pollsters and their analysis, people don't like the war, but they still cling to Donald Trump. He still has that hold on people. How much longer? We don't know. The polling is, the disapproval is gaining. And a lot of that, of course, is now, he never had the Democrats, but the independents have fled. And, you know, we saw that again this week in the couple of elections that occurred. The Marjorie Taylor Greene seat down in Georgia, it was what, a Trump plus 57 district or something. Mm-hmm. And the Republican won, but only by what, 20, by plus 20 or something like that.
Yeah, there was a 25 point swing against the Republicans. Democrats didn't win, but there was a 25 point swing against the Republicans.
And then we had the Supreme Court race in Wisconsin, mm-hmm. which, unlike the last two races, which were heavily publicized, you know, you had Elon Musk the last time there, a lot of money spent, a lot of sweat equity put into it. This one was much more low key. The last two, the Democrats won by about 54-46, 56-44, something like that. This time they got over 60%, the liberal Democrat got over 60%. And that puts that that Supreme Court now, instead of being a 4-3, a 5-2, which is where our Supreme Court is here in Pennsylvania. Right. Although we used to be 6-1, we're 5-2. Which is still a fairly safe thing, and it prevents a lot of mischief from being passed through the legislature. So we had those things this week going on.
And as long as you're with the courts, let's give a shout out to Todd Blanche, the acting attorney general, for making it crystal clear that judicial independence is not a platform of the Trump administration or of something that the Trump lawyers believe in. Because this week, didn't he reveal who his client is?
Yeah. His client, he made it clear that he caught himself a little bit, but he spilled the beans that his client is Donald Trump, that he's there to represent the president, not the Constitution or the people of the United States.
Now, then let's stop on that, because the oath they take is not to the president. It's to the Constitution. They're supposed to defend the laws. And isn't it the case that in the past, the president, if he was involved in something that he needed legal counsel for, was told, go get your own lawyer, because the DOJ represents the institution of the presidency and not the president.
Now, truth be told, presidents have in the past gone behind the scenes and talked to the court and to justices. If you read Doris Kearns Goodwin's great book about Team of Rivals, when you get to the Plessy versus Ferguson case, there's a strong implication that James Buchanan, who became president just about the time the decision came down, had some influence on that horrendous thing. There's no clear connection, but it was there. And we've known other presidents.
Lyndon Johnson and Abe Fortas.
That was where I'm going next.
Wow.
Or you had, in 1916, you had Charles Evans Hughes, the Chief Justice, stepping down to run for president.
Hmm.
Against Woodrow Wilson, and then after Wilson's term was up, we had former President William Howard Taft, a Republican, appointed Chief mm-hmm. Justice to the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
So it's never been, you know, without politics. And we were also discussing beforehand, you know, William Douglas, who was on the court for a long period of time, from the 30s to the 70s. He was a very political actor. And there were, you know, there was a lot of political shenanigans pulled when they convinced Justice Kennedy, William Kennedy, to step down so they could put Brett Kavanaugh in, a younger person. A lot of wheeling and dealing there.
Well, they learned from the example of the Democrats, who did not press Ruth Bader Ginsburg, or at least they didn't press her successfully.
Right. But then the Democrats learned, and Breyer left the court. We got Ketanji Brown Jackson.
Yes.
But anyway, yeah, with these, and don't forget Donald Trump, who got three appointees to the court, used to refer to them as my justices.
My generals, my justices.
Yeah, if I give you the position, you owe me.
Right.
That hasn't always worked out, and nor has it worked out in the lower and the intermediate appellate courts. They've ruled against Trump on a number of occasions, of course, except for that Eileen Cannon down in Florida.
And there's been one or two others who've done the same thing. She's the most famous, but one or two others.
She's the most outrageous about it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, she wants to be on the Supreme Court, so she's pushing herself.
Yeah, they campaign in different ways for that.
And just to show you how this business of the working hand in glove, Bannon's case was discharged by the Department of Justice, even though he's already served the time in jail.
Yeah, and the conviction wasn't overturned. It was just dismissed.
Yeah,
the case was dismissed, essentially overturning that. But this is something that there's a flaw in the Constitution, and there's no easy remedy for this, not even with an amendment. And that is that if the Justice Department, if the president has someone who will do his, who is at his beck and call as the attorney general, they will not prosecute the president's people. And what we're seeing now is going after political enemies.
And they'll pardon the president's people.
They'll do that. You know, they will come to settlements. Ashley Babbitt, will give her $5 million being a traitor and a rebel. You know, we'll give her family $5 million. She's dead.
Right.
Others like that. What's his name? Michael Flynn wants money, wants reparations. The people that Trump pardoned for attacking the Capitol, they want money for being their emotional distress for having actually been held into account, being convicted by juries and judges of their misconduct. There's a study out there about how many of them have now been rearrested for other crimes. It's amazing. You know, they were thugs. They were thugs.
Yeah. Well, these were the types of people who joined the brown shirts in the Nazi days or joined the black shirts in Mussolini's days because they liked beating people up, and that's what they were told they were allowed to do, and that's what they did do.
Yeah. With impunity. Remember Trump, when he was campaigning, told people to beat up protesters at his rallies, and he'd bail them out?
That's right. He'd pay the fine. That's exactly right.
You know, he encouraged this kind of physical violence. But what they're doing to the Justice Department is a different kind of, it's a, you know, violence to the Constitution. And as I said, there's no easy remedy for that. We've had, remember JFK had appointed his brother as Attorney General. And I think that they passed a law saying you couldn't have that. I'm not sure, but there was so much flack about it. You won't get a family member like that, but you don't need a family member. You just need people who are yes men, weak of character.
You need a type or people who agree with you.
Yeah.
They could have a strong character. You can both have rotten political ideas, very strongly held.
Yeah. And that was the thing. The founders thought that the only people that would be chosen to serve in government would be honorable men, to put it that way. You know, women weren't didn't have those privileges. But they're mistaken. They're mistaken. There are plenty of charlatans out there who are willing to step in.
But they're not charlatans. The point is, if they were charlatans, then there would not be a flaw in the system. But you don't need to be a charlatan. In fact, it's better if you're not a charlatan. You and I were taught, God knows how many times I was told, I live in a country of laws, not men.
Right.
But this proves that that the laws don't work if the people who enforce the laws are not devoted to the interests of the people, but are instead devoted to the interests of exploiters and gangsters. It is in the final analysis, humans count. Politics is paramount. There is no structural situation that can be that can stand in the way of politics. It just doesn't happen. Can't happen.
Yeah. Well, you're back to the Scott Galloway dichotomy, where he said you have one class of people. That's us, the ordinary people, who feel bound by the law but not protected by it.
Right.
And then you have the other class of people who feel protected by the law but not bound by it.
Right. And the people who feel bound by the law but are not protected by it ought to realize that they ought not to feel bound by the law. Or they ought to fight for a situation where they are protected by it.
That's the remedy for that. Well, that's the prescription for revolution.
Oh. Oh. But what's the choice? Trump? There's no Trump in your
advocate. I don't think we're there yet, but we have peaceful protests. That's with the No Kings rallies.
Yeah, but they don't go anywhere. Yeah.
And then some of the states are passing laws that make you can't stand within certain number of feet of ice, or you can't film things. Violence against the First Amendment in just another form.
Yeah.
The press and speech. Speaking of which, the model, the European model of oppressor, is up for election this weekend. Viktor Orban. The polling shows that he's in deep trouble, but the Russians are pouring in a lot of resources on social media and what have you. And our vice president went over to boost his chances and uttered the I don't see any irony about condemning people of outside influence in other countries' elections while he's out there being an outsider.
The vice president of the United States goes to a country, campaigns for one side in a contentious election, and claims that he is not an outsider interfering in the elections of that country, right? That's what?
Right.
That's it. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Pretty good. And of course, the reason for that is, the 2020 election where Trump rejects the interference of the Russians,
right,
to help him win.
Right.
It all gets back to that.
Right. Actually, he didn't reject their interference. He rejected being exposed, welcoming their interference.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No collusion. Meanwhile, my campaign manager got convicted of feeding information to a Russian intelligence agent.
Yeah.
My
national security advisor. I had to fire him because he met with the ambassador and refused to reveal it. Right.
Yeah, my current director of national intelligence sat down at the table with Vladimir Putin. There's that picture of her there, Tulsi Gabbard.
Yeah.
By the way, there's talk of her job being on the chopping block, along with Lutnick.
Well, I don't see that she need. They don't need her. What do they need her for? He doesn't regard the intelligence apparatus as anything useful. She wasn't invited to any of the deliberations about going to war with Iran.
He just needs her for cover, I guess. Yeah, you know, if something comes up. But you know, he may not want to fire three women in a row. He might do Lutnick first. But speaking of Lutnick, and we don't know, but apparently it happened again that just before Trump, if we want to say, chickened out on his threat at the last hour, there were bets placed on the poly markets about this, and small fortunes made once again. Insider trading by another form or another way.
Yeah.
And speaking of that, buying stocks. We learned this week that Fetterman's been doing that. Our senator bought stock in Micron Technology just before they got a big contract that in an industry that his committee oversees. And there's been other things. And of course, the king of stock buying in our area is my congressman, Rob Bresnahan, who continues to do it. Interestingly enough, now has support from some group on billboards throughout Lackawanna and Luzerne County. Can't read the fine print, but has a very curious slogan on the billboard with his picture, protecting our families from deadly diseases.
He's the deadly disease.
Fascism is a deadly disease.
He's the front man for it. Without people like Bresnahan, people like Trump don't really succeed. Yeah. You gotta have people who can say, I got nothing to do with it, but I support him. And that's, you know, that's Bresnahan. He votes for Trump down the line.
Yeah, and then claims that he's, you know, really helping people. He's got one commercial out there about how, you know, he's bringing money in for people to get better health care. After the fact that he voted to cut far more money out of healthcare, for people. But hypocrisy knows no bounds. By the way, the one person who's kind of laying low in all this, but should be challenged, although they do have regular small protests outside of his offices, is the other senator, McCormick. He voted for all these people that are now having to be dismissed as cabinet officers. He voted for Pete Hegseth.
Does McCormick have any real political presence in Pennsylvania?
You're not hearing a lot about him.
No. I bet you if you asked the typical Pennsylvanian who are the two senators, they'd know Fetterman, but they wouldn't know McCormick.
Right. And Fetterman's going to be interesting if he decides to run for re-election, whether he's going to run as a Democrat and face primary opposition, or whether he's going to run as an independent or cross over as I don't think he's going to cross over, because although he's popular among Republicans, he's not going to be that popular. He's not going to be one of them.
Right.
Probably a stance on abortion will take him out of that as well. But there's, you know, we've already seen where Susan Wilde, former congresswoman from the Lehigh Valley, said she's considering a primary challenge. Connor Lamb, who lost to him very badly the last time, although he was the party pick, is, you know, considering a run. And there was something I saw this week that maybe Bob Casey would throw his hat back in to get back to the Senate, although I haven't seen any confirmation on that at all. I just saw one article.
In a period of time in which people are demanding new faces for the Democratic Party, Connor Lamb and Bob Casey, they are not new faces.
Connor's fairly new. He was only a congressman for one term, I think.
Yeah, but he lost. He didn't make a real big splash.
Right. You know, speaking of not making a splash, I saw where former Vice President Harris has started putting out feelers saying she hasn't decided whether she's going to run or not again for the nomination.
It's inconceivable that you could win.
I'm with you on that. Yeah. But I mean, the first question is, what would you do different? You know, that was the question she couldn't answer with regard to Joe Biden.
I'd say the first question for her is, are you going to be able to raise $200 million this time like you did last time?
Well, last time they had the
It didn't help her.
Right.
Yeah. No, yeah. It's a toughie. But, you know, that brings you to California, where the Democrats are having an atrocious time. The front runners were Katie Porter and what's his name?
Eric Swalwell.
Eric Swalwell.
But they were both trailing the two Republicans.
Right.
Because there's five or six more Democrats in the race who are polling at 3%, 5%, 8%, and siphoning off just enough votes that the two Republicans could be at the top, the way the California system is run. The top two finishers in the primary, no matter party or lack of party, get to run in the runoff in the general election. But this week, a major development in that a number of women came out and accused Eric Swalwell of sexual harassment issues. And immediately his support vanished. His chief of staff resigned. His endorsers like Adam Schiff pulled their endorsement and told him pull out of the race. Right now he's trying to tough it out. But the winner in this was someone who jumped in rather late, and that was former presidential candidate Tom Steyer.
Yeah, but he's got a benefit. He doesn't need to raise money.
Yeah, he's a billionaire.
Yeah, exactly.
So he had some name recognition from his aborted run years ago, and I think that you're going to see consolidation probably around him as not being the political candidate, being, the business candidate. And all he has to do is finish second, and then the general election is pretty much his in a Democratic state like that.
So he's got 2 months to finish second, is what it amounts to, because the primary is June 2nd.
Some of the polls already have him in second place after the Swalwell thing, but let's give that a few days to kind of calm down and then see what the next round of polls show.
Yeah.
So I mean,
you can't beat the best story of the week. Forget history. We have the guy that Trump appointed to be the head of FEMA, the agency that takes care of natural disasters, who claimed that he was twice teleported from where he was to a Waffle House to have lunch. Teleported. Beam me up to Waffle House.
Scotty, yes.
This is the guy in charge of taking care of natural disorders. Can you believe this?
Natural disasters. Well, there's some people that think Waffle House might have been a natural disaster. But they serve grits, at Waffle House. At least he could go to an IHOP or a Denny's. Why Waffle House? I don't know. Or a Chick-fil-A. Right? That's the
the Republican. And when he was questioned about it, he stood behind it. He said, yes, it happened. And he described the physical sensation of having your molecules dissolved and then reassembled 100 miles further away. It's mind-boggling.
Now, nobody at any of the Waffle Houses seems to remember him being reassembled in the middle of the...
Maybe that's an aspect of teleportation. Nobody around you knows it's happening. Who's to say differently?
not you, not I.
Not so, me. All right. Anyway, let's stick with FDR. Let's stick with the results of the Civil War. That's hopeful.
Yes. Yes. As we live through an era where they're trying to undo
everything. See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.